Well, I think we're solidly into summer now. We've made that final slide after the wrapping up of the school year, planning a vacation, and all kinds of nice warm weather coming our way. I can almost feel the little reduction in activity. And we are really solidly into that place of summer where we can enjoy more time outside, it's lighter longer, and where we have some extra rest time, hopefully. Now, the church is in a similar place in our season, our long season of the season after Pentecost. I like to call it the long green season, because when you look out our windows, you can see the green for just about the entire season that runs from Trinity Sunday, usually in June, all the way down to Advent. And all along this time, in this season after Pentecost, our lessons come with a very specific focus. You know, the lessons of Advent are focused on the coming of Christ. The lessons of Lent are focused on his final journey. The lessons of the season after Pentecost are focused on how we are to be disciples. What is it we're supposed to do? What is it that we have to know to live as disciples of Jesus Christ? And that is the emphasis of almost all of our gospel lessons all throughout this season. And Jesus' major way to tell us how to be his disciples is the parable. The parable. Common definition is it's a story. We also had some definitions that we came across during our time in seminary. One of them was an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. My homiletics professor also talked about the definition of a parable as a nice little story which, when you're not looking, smacks you up the side of the head. I like that one better. I'm from New Jersey. So these stories are a mystery. The big point of a parable, in most definitions, is there's no explanation given. And the way we teach our children is we use a box like this. We have a curriculum called Godly Play, and in this curriculum you have all the materials you need as a teacher to teach a lesson, and they might be in a basket or in a tray or in a box like this. And how they're arranged also has meaning. This is a golden box. It's a box painted gold, and we tell the children, this is a parable box. And it's gold because it's very valuable. And the box has an outside, and the box has an inside, just like a parable. And sometimes we can see inside a parable and find something there, and sometimes we can't. Sometimes it's a mystery, and so we're just left holding the mystery. Well, if a parable is a mystery, I want you to think back to last week's parable about the sower and this week's parable about the wheat and the weeds. If you were there last week, you heard the parable explained. Okay, if the parable is supposed to not have an explanation, not be an allegory, what were they doing saying? The seed that the sower threw on the rocky ground was the word of God, and the rocky ground is the hard heart. The good ground is the receptive spirit, and the seed is the word of God. And in this week's story, the wheat and the weeds. Well, the wheat is the good, and the weeds are sown by the evil one, and at the end of the age, the angels are going to come and reap all of those growing things and separate the good from the bad, burn the bad, and celebrate the good. Well, with an explanation like that, you don't have to pay much more attention to that parable. It's been done for you. But the reason why we sometimes see these explanations, it's not behind every parable, is because of the way our history, our tradition, was brought forth in story. So as they told the story of the parable over and over without writing it down, happened for decades, people would attach meaning to it. And it appears, generally speaking, that meanings got attached to these stories, and they came to be written in that form. Not necessarily the intention of the teaching, because a parable, at its base, is a mystery. Singer-songwriter Iris DeMent put it like this. Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worried about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. No one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. I think I'll just let the mystery be. Now, Iris DeMent got the parable. And if she were to listen to this story, she would have said, appropriately, this is a good agricultural story. It's a story of a farmer who woke up one day to a horrible fact. She would have been able to enter the story the way we don't sometimes. We're 21st century people. We like to know. Don't you like to know? I like things explained to me. I love information. I love it that we have conquered things over the past 50 years that took hundreds of years to be around and not have any way of addressing them. My example is exploration of the moon. We've conquered the moon. We've conquered certain diseases like polio, in general, eradicated from the earth, in general. And so we really want to know. We want the explanation. Tell me, Jesus, what it means. Well, that prevents us from entering the parable the way Iris DeMent might. So we could try that just for a minute. In the parable, it's an agricultural story because that was the way the world was. Jesus would talk about wheat fields and fig trees and sheep and vineyards, some of which really we don't see every day. And those were the meaningful stories. And so the farmer in the wheat field is not really that close to us, or is it? I have a garden. To weed or not to weed? What do? Well, you could put down black mulch. You can use chemicals. You could pull them out by hand. You could pour vinegar on them. You could do all kinds of things to get rid of weeds. The question in the parable is, do you? Do you? The farmer says, well, you know, I can tell a weed from the wheat. I can pull it out, and I know what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. But can he? Can he really? And all of us have that struggle of knowing of the wheat and the weeds that are around us or in our lives. Which is which? And even if we can tell which, is it right to pull it out and risk the rest? Well, there was a wise woman. Her name is Kathleen Norris. She wrote a little bit about this, about the nature of good and evil in our lives. I am not a good person, nor notably evil on the human continuum, but one who struggles with ordinary yet dangerous temptations to anger and revenge, to pride and greed, the fool's gold of vainglory and the improper manipulation of other people to further my own ends. You name it, it's all there. I don't know much about how to deal with my own evil, but I have learned enough to recognize that sometimes all I can do is pray. For her, we're all made up of wheat and weeds. God says, well, it'll all be sorted out later. But I want something to speak to my condition now. I really would like God to let me know what to do about anger and frustration and greed. But St. Paul has something to say about that. St. Paul has something to say about just about everything. But this is what he says. For in hope we are saved. For in hope we are saved. Hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is seen? If we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. We hope for that which we do not see. We hope for that that we don't understand at all. I don't understand lots of things. I don't understand planes being shot from the air. I don't understand cancer. I don't understand child abuse. But we wait in hope. And I'm here to tell you that God holds us and accepts us and loves us through this life and keeps us to the end. I can't prove it. Can't explain it. Sometimes all we can do is pray and let the mystery be.